Ah, hello, and welcome to the podcast. This is Carter and Moore, off script and on side. Now, we're going to bring you stories from women's sport, all the stories, all the happenings, the progress that's being made in women's sport, and all nicely timed to coincide with the Women's Rugby World Cup, which starts on August the 22nd in Britain. Thrilled about that. My name is Jim Carter, by the way. I'm an actor and I'm a sports fan.
Hello, my name's Brian Moore. I suppose I'm here because I did play a little bit of rugby. And that's about it, I suppose.
Brian, I'm sorry to go off script quite so early. I did play a little bit of rugby. Can we just examine this for a moment? I think you played for England about 60-odd times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you played for the Lions 5 times. Yeah. And in 1991, you were the World Rugby Player of the Year.
Yes, that's true. I suppose it's not too bad.
No, it's not too bad. Brian is an iconic rugby player, everybody, and extremely self-deprecating. We're not letting him get away with that. Now, before we bring on our first guest, and we're thrilled about this, I think we should say a little bit about the more discerning of you will have worked out that we are, in fact, men. And you might want to know why men are talking about women in sport. So, Brian, your connection is?
Well, my connection, certainly rugby-wise, simply came a long time ago in 1991, when women's rugby was just really starting as an organised sport. And some of the girls that I knew from Richmond, and that one of the pubs in Richmond, to be frank, they just said, look, we need some help with the forwards, the England forwards. Will you come down and do a session with us? And I didn't even register with it me properly that it was women's rugby. It was just the fact that there were rugby players who wanted to get better. And I thought it was great. So I went down and I did a few sessions with them. And over the years, I've followed the sport as it's grown and grown to the point where now they're hosting a World Cup. It's going to be the biggest World Cup. England are the favourites, and if they do well, we're hoping that it will give the sport as well some version of what the Lionesses have done in football.
Absolutely. There's a motto out there, something more than a moment or something like that. I mean, we hope that it'll spread, you know, like as you say, like the Lionesses. My connection, I mean, basically, I mean, the simple answer is my mother was a woman, my wife's
really?
A woman. Yes, she was. She was a kind of Yorkshire woman that you'd ring up and she'd say, have you seen the 53-for-4 and boycotts out? And, you know,
yeah.
You know, my childhood was sort of driving around the Yorkshire Dales and you'd stop and watch her.
He should have played back, you know.
Yeah?
That ball, he should have played back.
Yeah.
She would have said that, wouldn't she?
Oh, she would have done. I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife's a woman who's so unsporting that the anarchists in her school elected her sports captain for a laugh. And my daughter, you know, and I love sport. So, yeah, hey, that's my connection. In a nutshell, more specifically, where I live, I'm back onto Hampstead Cricket Club, and my daughter played cricket with the young lads when she was young. And hockey used the cricket club in the winter, and some of them said, well, any chance of us playing cricket in the summer? And I thought, now, if I take this to the committee, the committee were really good at finding problems for solutions. And I thought, if I take it to them, they'll just say no, you know. So a very nice Aussie coach and I just started the women's cricket there 21 years ago. We celebrate our 21st year this year. And I'm proud to say that my daughter was their opening bowler at the age of 12. That's my connection. So, I think, should we bring on our today's guest?
I think we should.
We should. Would you like to introduce her?
Yes, of course. I mean, well, Jim, I'm really pleased to say that we have got Lisa O'Keefe here. Lisa is a Scottish international, ex-Scottish international. She now works as the Secretary General of the International Working Group on Women in Sport. So, come on down.
So, welcome, Lisa O'Keefe. Delighted to have you here. Now, as Brian alluded to earlier, you were a rugby player, Scottish rugby player, and I've done some research on you, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. And I found that the first time you played for Scotland, you played for Scotland A in the morning. Is that right?
That's true, yes.
Could you explain?
Yes, I can. So this was back in 1994, and I played, as you say, for Scotland A against Wales. We won spectacularly 5-0. And just as I was coming off the pitch, a car came round the corner and the manager of the Scotland team came running out of the car and said, "Lisa, get in the back of the car. We need cover on the bench." Now, Brian, I remember back in 94, we couldn't do tactical subs, right? See, chances are you're not getting on the pitch, right? But they got me to the ground. They literally took one set of kit off, put the other one on, sat me on the bench. And as I was seizing up, you know, every 2 minutes, they'd like, "Oh, go for a trot, go for a trot." And then with 5 minutes to go, a second row went down. So not actually my favourite position. Defending a 5 metre scrum whilst Scotland were winning 5-0 again. And I don't know much about what happened in the front row, I have to say, Brian, but somehow we took the ball against the head.
Never.
Cleared our lines, won the game 5-0. So I beat Wales twice, 5-0 in the same day.
That's got to be some kind of record. That's spectacular.
I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, of course you will be. Yeah.
Lisa, I mean, we've got the Women's World Cup coming here on these shores.
Yeah.
What are your hopes for it?
Oh, crikey. So I've been really fortunate, Brian. I've been to quite a few World Cups, both playing and watching. And if I think back, the first World Cup I really remember was 1994, which was in Scotland. And actually, they organised that event in 90 days, would you believe? That's a different story from another podcast, I think. But what I saw in that day as a real fan of rugby was two amazing teams in the final, USA, England, going toe-to-toe. Jim Fleming, then one of the best referees, if not the best referee in the world, was refereeing the final. The BBC were covering it. It was live on BBC telly. And it just opened my eyes to the fact that rugby was an amazing game, but also that there was a fan base for it if you really got behind the women playing the sport. I was then fortunate enough to be at the last Rugby World Cup final at Eden Park, where I saw the most amazing game between New Zealand and England. And both of those matches, again, just really sort of demonstrated to me the power of these big occasions to celebrate and showcase what amazing athletes these rugby players are, because they are just rugby players. It's not men's or women's rugby, it's rugby of the highest standard. So my big hope for this World Cup is, one, it'll be the showcase, of course it will be, but also I hope that all the hard work that's been done by World Rugby, by the RFU, by the other unions to build the game and ready the clubs for what might happen as a result of this World Cup. I hope all of that comes to fruition because, you know, we're so fortunate to have the World Cup here in England.
And to be read all favourites. Media, this is England I'm talking about. Sorry, Lisa. Oh.
No, I mean, England are favourites. Yeah. They've got to live with that mantle.
Yeah.
And they've got to create their own standards and all the other things that come with that.
Absolutely. But I think the setup behind the team and the approach of the players, I think, is just spot on. And I'm just looking forward to not just whoever is in the final, but the fact that rugby is going to be played, you know, first game in the Stadium of Light, for goodness sake, in Sunderland. I can't believe that. But taking these amazing athletes to all corners of the country and giving opportunity for people to see possibly women's sport for the first time.
I tell you what, my hope is this. If we can get more people, not just women of both sexes, watching the game for the first time, or even as casual fans, they will see a standard of rugby which they can say, that's good, rather than saying, well, it doesn't matter because it's only just started. Anyway, they can judge it on the right standards, professional standards, because the game is good enough now.
Yeah. It is, absolutely is good enough. And the athletes and the athleticism is amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what I hope for, Brian. I hope that we sit and watch matches where commentators are saying, crikey, we didn't expect that game to be so close. And to see some favourites being run close or losing the odd pool game to countries that maybe people hadn't expected to do so well.
Who will those be?
Well,
England are starting up against the USA. USA are coming up, are they?
Well, I mean, on the okay, so you'd expect, as favourites, England, of course, to win that game. Mm. But my goodness, the USA, what a strong team. We saw what they did in the sevens at the Olympics. Their 15 side is a strong, strong outfit. And they are ready. They are ready for this game.
USA, Canada.
Canada. Well, Canada always punch above their weight. And for me, with Canada in the pool with Scotland, Fiji and Wales, I am particularly interested in what Canada do this time.
And, of course, New Zealand, the Black Ferns. Thank God we've got a New Zealand coach. they ran the women very, very close in the...
Absolutely.
In front of, I think, that last game against France, I think there were 48,500 people in Twickenham. And that's not women, that's rugby fans, isn't it? I mean, that's huge. So, Lisa, can I ask you, I mean, as an innocent in this, there was an obvious effect on girls. I mean, the girls... took up soccer, took up footballing in great numbers. What's the pathway into rugby? Because a lot of schools won't offer rugby. They won't have the grounds for it or the ability. So is it just they've got to find their local club? If a girl sees something fantastic, they've got to find their local club. Is that the route in?
Yeah, so rugby is very much, as you say, a club sport. Mm. And that, of course, is both the opportunity and the challenge because finding places to play that are local to you as a child. You've got to be fortunate enough to have either a rugby club on your doorstep or to have outreach programs in your local community where you just get a chance to hold a rugby ball and run and pass. Mm. I mean, that's ultimately what we want. And of course, it's a sport that heavily relies on volunteers within the clubs to create the right kind of environments where children want to be there and can have fun with their friends and socialise.
Because I found in cricket that the girls feel more inspired if the women's first team are coaching them, and we struggle to find women coaches in cricket because there aren't enough yet come out of the professional game to trickle down into coaching. I mean, how is it in rugby?
So first of all, just in sport in general, there are fewer women coaching than men. Yeah. That is absolutely the case. There are some sports where that is an exception. But as you rightly say, in rugby, there are few female coaches. But in the first instance, I think what's most important is that there are coaches who just want children, all ages, boys and girls, to have a rugby ball in their hand. There's a lot of work going on to understand why there are fewer women coaching, but more importantly, what we can do about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is really important.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I, like others, you know, I've been watching Serena Wiegmann absolutely excel at the top of her sport. And so, you know, primetime television, we are seeing...
One of the things that I hope through we can get this message out through the Women's Rugby World Cup is that Sunday mornings, when many rugby takes place, you'll see as many moms with their sons and daughters as dads. The dads are the ones who step onto the pitch. There's no reason why at that sort of age, you know, sevens, eights, nines, tens, the women can't coach as well, because the skills that they're coaching are quite simple. They're obviously the basic skills, so they need to be absolutely mastered. So they're very important. But you don't need to have a massive background in the game. And if you could start it there, then you'd have a springboard, because it would be there would be more women as examples. Yes. And it could roll from there. The problem when you're starting to talk about higher levels is the women's game has not progressed enough to having the basic percentage of people who want to convert and therefore go forward. It takes about a decade to go through. So we're starting to get enough there. But if we could get some of the women who come down with their children to step on the coaching field, because you only need the early qualification for the RFU to teach that.
Yeah.
And I mean the unique selling point, or one of the unique selling points about rugby, is that it can incorporate any shape and any size. I think it's not restricted to one kind of physical part of expertise because of the different roles.
That is a genuine thing as well. In the same way you say that about we say that about boys and men, but even more so for girls, because if you think about the traditional sports for girls, netball and so on, there's no place in the traditional sports for someone who is not particularly dexterous but he's just big and strong. You know, football requires, you know, the skill, that skill base. Cricket requires hand and eye coordination. Rugby has a place for people who aren't necessarily that good, but are strong and athletic.
And we've seen that with the popularity of Ilona Mayer, who's, how many TikTok followers is she, the American?
4 million.
4 million TikTok followers came over to play for Bristol, was it? I mean, yep. Massive following. And she's very, her thing is, you know, be proud of your body, is that right?
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons why sport is so important, because ultimately, we are talking about our kids, aren't we? Our boys and girls moving more, being physically active. And we do find that for women and girls, there is a challenge in terms of just some of the cultural norms and gendered stereotypes about what girls should look like, how they should behave, you know, what, how much space they're allowed to inhabit. And what sport allows you to do is actually just be big and take up space and be loud and be boisterous. All the things that are really, really important.
Well, you look at Maud Muir, who plays for England. I mean, I love her. I mean, she looks like butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. And when she's got a rugby ball in her hand, she's like a velociraptor. I mean, she just becomes, well, she, oh, look how it is. And it's fantastic. And so, and she celebrates being a strong woman, you know.
Which we should all be encouraging and celebrating.
Yeah.
I remember doing an interview where I was really challenged by the person interviewing me saying, I just don't understand why you would play rugby, Lisa, because no woman looks good on a rugby pitch. And I was trying to justify the fact that I played rugby not because of how it made me look, but how it made me feel. And I couldn't understand why I had to try and justify that, and why I had to try and justify playing a sport which so many people in this country love. Why can't I play it too?
Yeah.
And that's what I never understand when people challenge women's
sport. Yeah, but and Brian, it strikes me that rugby is one of the sports that creates a bigger bonding team ethic somehow than any other. Is that right, you say?
We're all interested in sport. Mm. The great thing about sport is that it is competitive. It's one of the few things in life where there are agreed metrics about who wins and loses. Mm. Doesn't matter what school you went to, doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter how much money you've got, who your dad is, who your mom is. The fact is, we agree who wins. And that is great because it teaches children to win and lose, you know, equally. It teaches you lessons in life. If they're team sports, it makes you compromise in the way you have to. Rugby is a game, which I would genuinely say this, is very interactive. You know, in cricket's a strange game, isn't it? Because it's interactive when you're fielding,
yeah.
But when you're batting,
it's a solo. Yeah,
it's a solo game. So it's a hybrid. Rugby is not like that. You know, if you're on a field, if the tight end doesn't do the job, the winger never gets the ball. Yeah. And, you know, it's very interactive. So it teaches you all those.
I'm laughing because I'm remembering. I mean, I only played rugby at school. And you said it teaches you about winning and losing. I learned a very good lesson when we played Round Day.
I played Round Day.
And they beat us 100-0. So I learned about losing that day. And some of them, I mean, we were the under-14s. Some of them shaved twice a day at least and had bits of raw meat hanging out of their mouths. And they'd stand there with the ball in one hand, pushing us off, saying, go away, lad. Who hasn't scored yet? Rowley, do you want to score? Take that, son. 100-0. We were always kicking off and running back. Yeah, I learnt about losing.
can I pick up on a point you've both made there? Because you're right. Sport and sports clubs create opportunities for us to learn, don't they? It's about playing it fluently.
Completely.
But that also creates opportunities for us to learn some bad things as well as some good things, as far as I'm concerned, because some of the most gendered spaces in this country can be sports clubs. So, you know, I can think of places that I've been to sports clubs where I have felt uncomfortable by the very fact I am female. And so I'm interested from your perspective, because obviously you are both spent a long time in sports that have been very gendered. It's changing now, but they have been very gendered. And how you've felt, did you notice, first of all, and how did you feel about it?
I haven't spent so much time in a sporting environment, and in my world, I think, well, behind the camera, I think things are still quite gendered. In front of the camera, less so. And and in front of the camera, if I'm working with sort of a 20-year-old and it's their first job, we work as equals. There aren't the barriers there. But I think sport is kind of different from that. But I haven't come across many specific examples. I've come lots of sort of minor, I mean, just annoying examples of everyday misogyny, which, you know, in our cricket club, they refer to the first team. And you always have to say, first men's team or first women's team? Could we be specific here? Just those niggling, come on, you know, there are other people exist. So, but sorry, I don't know if I answered your question, Lisa, but...
Well, no, you did. I mean, that's a really good example. Just, it's the small...
The small.
It's the small points that often, you know, they magnify, don't they? And language is so important in this space because it sends a signal, actually, about whether you're part of this or whether you're other.
And
that's what we're always trying to change. But,
you know,
again, you've seen the whole change.
One of the things I think is a difficult thing. Misogyny is a harsh word, and rightly so, for when it's practiced, because it has ill effects, bad ill effects. The problem... I think sometimes is that you have inadvertent misogyny, if that's possible, where men or dads or whatever just don't quite think things through because they've always thought this way. I think I've done things occasionally because I've got four daughters where I think, actually, would I have done that if it was a son? I thought, well, maybe I would approach it a different way. And that's I'm not trying to do that. Mm. What I'm trying to say is it's not just around the blatant examples, of which we've got far too many, the Andrew Tates of this world and people like that. We're addressing, you know, men who want to help, but just maybe haven't made the connections as to the way that they think in them and how a small change might make a big difference.
Yeah, and also just why it's so important as well. You know, I often, of course, in my job, think a lot about women and girls sport and what we can do to help create more opportunities and better opportunities for women and girls to play sport. But the reason for me why this is all so important is because, as much as I hate to say it, sport is a minority activity. You know, as we sit here today, less than half of children in this country exercise enough to meet the chief medical officer's guidelines, right? So we have a big problem in terms of how active the nation is. But we also know that one of the biggest factors present in the lives of children who go on to be adults who regularly play sport is the behaviour of their mother or their grandmother or their female carer. And if she's active, the message that sends within that family unit is so powerful, you know, whether...
Well, when it comes to women in coaches, one of the biggest difficulties is that women do not have the time because they take on, even if they both work, both husband and wife work, they do the majority of the chores and the household looking because it's expected they do. And therefore, and when men go out and coach, you know, boys or whatever, they get praised and said, oh, it's great, isn't it? And with women, they say, well, why aren't you looking after your kids? Your own kids. You say, well, that doesn't happen the other way around.
Definitely is a bit of that. But also, you know, it's what more can the sports club, which again, we've got to keep in mind, these are volunteers, so everybody's hard pushed, but what more can we do to make it possible for somebody who does have multiple time commitments to do some coaching and be part of that club when they can't commit that traditional sort of pattern of how a coach should behave so that they can still be involved, but in a way that works with their lifestyle? And I think bottom line in all of this is we just keep on needing the sports system to think about how it needs to evolve and change to make itself not just relevant, but possible and open and accessible for as many people as possible to take part.
Can I just say one thing? All the research evidence is this, is it isn't what men say about opportunities for girls and women, it's actually what they do. Several studies have shown quite conclusively that girls who live with fathers who actually share chores, who actually do other bits and pieces, like they're running around, their horizons are widened, rather than by what is said. So it's doing, not saying.
And that then releases that time for the
Well, it's not just that, you're seeing the example of it.
Seeing the example, right, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's also saying, this is normal, this is what we do.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful message.
Yeah.
And again, I see exactly the same when we look at women seeking to be more active. They will often decide not to do that activity because they worry about how the rest of the family will feel. If the family actually are quite proactive and say, why haven't you been going down to that gym class? Or notice you're not going to yoga anymore, whatever it is, get down to the rugby club. What can we do to make that possible for you to do that? That is such a powerful message.
Absolutely. Lisa, it's been fantastic to talk to you. I mean, we could talk all day and all night, I think. But it has been brilliant. And I just hope you love the World Cup. I mean, we're looking forward to it, aren't we, Brian?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's brilliant.
Well, great to see Lisa really passionate about sport. I tell you why I'm passionate about sport. Because my former world is different to your current world in this sense. Sport is about the moment. It is one of the only areas in life where we, as I say, where we all agree who's won. You don't get that 80 minutes back and that's it. Your sports career can be over with one injury. You've no longevity beyond a certain age because you're either dropped, you're not good enough, or you're too old. But the attraction of winning and losing is quite addictive in a way which, and I sometimes think, I think you revere things you like to do, but you can't do. I couldn't act. But then again, I wouldn't like to be in a situation where people were judging me for things I didn't think were relevant. Like, you know, my family didn't have any money. I didn't go to a public school. But when I played sport, I knew who'd won and you knew who'd won. And that's what I liked.
You see, that would freak me out, I think, because, I mean, in our game, you know, you can have a very good career and a very long career, much longer than any sportsman, and you can always deflect the blame. It's all Shakespeare's fault or the tights were too short or too tight or something like that. I think you've got a very strong competitive instinct. I mean, I love sport for the playing of it, and I will happily watch a game that's a brilliant game, even if my team lose. If it's a great game of rugby, cricket, or whatever, I don't mind so much if it's a good game. But I don't have that competitive thing, which is why I never really carried on playing sport beyond pub and theatre cricket. Uncomfortable with that.
You've got to be competitive in acting.
Not at all. It's a cooperative game, Ara. I mean, you're judged all the time. You're judged on things, as you say. You say we're irrelevant. You're judged on your appearance and all sorts of things. But it's not competitive. Who are you competing against? Yeah, I'm not competing against Tom Cruise for parts or Imelda Staunton for parts. Even you're just wandering around. You put on other people's clothes and shout at strangers in the evening and you get paid for it. You know, it's fantastic. But don't tell everybody.
I'm sure I've seen you in Mission Improbable.
No, you might have seen you've seen me in Transformers The Last Act or something like that. but not me. You've heard my voice because I'm a butler about that tall, made by a computer. And then the director was completely mad. He hired me because I was a butler and he wanted me to be like the butler in Downton Abbey. And he said, Jim, be more like that guy in Downton Abbey. And I am that guy in Downton Abbey. Oh, I can't be anymore. All right, mate, yeah, carry on. So, Brian, this is our first one together. I've really enjoyed it. We're going to do more, I hope, and we're going to have great conversations. Hopefully, we're going to get in some fantastic guests during the Women's Rugby World Cup, and we'll talk about rugby and spin off into all sorts of wonderful things. I think we are both sports lovers, and we both love sport, and we think that it should be available to all men, women, children, everybody, regardless.
It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that. That's what it is. And if you've enjoyed it, please do join us again. And if you want to find out more about Women in Sport, go to the website womeninsport.org and you can sign up for the newsletter. You can find out how to donate or just get involved in any way you can. But please, we'd love to see you back again. Thank you very much.